Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 3, Hiranyakashipu's plan to become immortal, and we'll just read the first verse of two verses, 37 to 38. Yasubir avasumadirva sarasura maho ragai aprati dvanvatat aprati dvandvatam yude aika patyam tadehinam. Vyasubhi, by things that have no life, Vama, or Asumadhi, by entities that have life, Va, or Sura, by the demigods, Asura, the demons, Maha-uragai, by the great serpents who live on the lower planets, Apratidvanvatam, without a rival, Yudai, in battle, Aika Patyam, supremacy, Sha, and Dehinam, over those who have material bodies. Translation of purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Grant me that I not meet death from any entity, living or non-living. Grant me further that I not be killed by any demigod or demon or any great snake from the lower planets. Since no one can kill you in battlefield, you have no competitor. Therefore, grant me the benediction that I too may have no rival. Grant me sole lordship over all other living entities and presiding deities. And give me all the glories obtained by that position. Furthermore, give me all the mystic powers obtained by long austerities and the practice of yoga, for these cannot be lost at any time. Purport. Lord Brahma obtained his supreme position due to long austerities and penances, mystic yoga, meditation, and so on. Hiranyakashipu wanted a similar position. The ordinary powers achieved by mystic yoga, austerities, and other processes is sometimes vanquished, but the powers obtained by the mercy of the Lord are never vanquished. Hiranyakashipu therefore wanted a benediction that would never be vanquished. As in the Bhaktivedanta purports of the seventh canto, third chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Hiranyakashipu's Plan to Become Immortal. We can say that perhaps he wanted to become Krishna conscious, but he just didn't have the good association. His main association was Hiranyaksha, who was also a demon like he was. And therefore he didn't understand that if he wanted to become immortal, he could have done it if he would have chanted Hare Krishna. Because he was already immortal, he just didn't understand it. All he had to do is realize he was eternal, and all his problems would have been solved. But because he didn't know he was already eternal, although it's very strange, if you had the power to live in your bones, you must have some idea of something's going on here, beyond just this gross body. But as we can see, as we'll read on, the main problem is not his body. Our main problem is not our body. It's not even our mind. It's not even our faulty intelligence. The main problem is our false ego. We can give up our own body, and yet we won't give up our false ego. Just like when Krishna and Arjuna and Bhima went to see Jarasandha. Yudhisthira Maharaj wanted to execute the Rajasuya sacrifice to prove that if you become a devotee of Lord Krishna, then you don't necessarily lose everything. Krishna will give you all opulence. So he wanted to show that at this Rajasuya sacrifice, that although he was a devotee of Lord Krishna, along with his brothers, they didn't lose everything. Although at one time they did lose everything. But Krishna gave them more opulence than the King of Heaven. But in order to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice, which indicates that you're the emperor of the whole world, at that time the world was a little bit more than this little Bharatvarsha planet. It meant at least Jambudvipa, if not more than that, which includes other varshas besides Bharatvarsha. In order to do that, you have to execute the Rajasuya sacrifice, where you let the horse out roaming freely, and everyone has to, the army follows the horse. Wherever the horse goes, then the reigning personalities there have to give some tribute and pledge that they're under Maharaj Yudhisthira. So they let the horse out. They collected all the necessary wealth. The kings pledged allegiance to Yudhisthira Maharaj, and therefore he could perform the Rajasuya sacrifice. Unfortunately, Jarasandha refused because he was rather proud, having the strength of 10,000 elephants. And they were Dwarpa elephants, not just Kali Yuga elephants. They were really powerful elephants. So that even Kulyavalpita had the strength of 10,000 elephants, although he was one elephant. And Jarasandha had the strength of 10,000 elephants also. And he had captured 27,000 kings and put them into a prison in a cave. And he was going to sacrifice them before a goddess Durga to get more power. And these were not just ordinary puny kings, they were Dwarpa kings. They were actually, in Dwarpa Yuga, Krishna was rather small. He was only, I guess in meters, he was only 5 meters tall. So he was rather small for a Kshatriya. Generally, Kshatriyas were at least 6-7 meters tall. And he captured all these 27,000 of them, put them in a cave. Now, when Narada Muni came and invited Krishna to come for the Rajasuya sacrifice, at the same time, the representative of the kings, who were imprisoned by Jarasandha, came and requested if Krishna could come and free them from the grip of Jarasandha, because after all, Jarasandha was a demon, and they were devotees. Now, it was confusing, because Narada Muni asked Krishna to go to the Rajasuya sacrifice. At the same time, the representatives of the kings who were in prison asked him to come and free them from the grip of Jarasandha. So both of them were devotees. Krishna asked Uddhava, what should I do? And Uddhava thought and said that first you should go and liberate the kings. And then when you defeat Jarasandha, especially if Bhima fights against him, and if you're there, then you'll be able to defeat Jarasandha. And if you defeat Jarasandha, then Yudhisthira Maharaj can perform the Rajasuya sacrifice. So that was their plan. Krishna, Bhima, and Arjuna, they all, of course, everyone went to Hastinapur, where Maharaj Yudhisthira and the Pandavas were there, ready to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice. It's quite a description, because they just didn't pack their bag and get on an airplane. They went with 16,108 queens, all of them went. I mean, that's quite logistically challenging to bring not just ladies, but queens with palanquins and servants and everything going on and soldiers, and it's inconceivable. And then when they arrived at Hastinapur, just the fact that Maharaj Yudhisthira could have greeted them gives you some idea of what the opulence of Dwarpa Yuga was compared to Kali Yuga. If you go with 15 people to a, you know, you're a representative of a country, go with 15 people, they're challenged to take care of you. But there, there are probably millions of followers of Krishna coming. And Yudhishthira Maharaj greeted them, and then Krishna and Balaram and Bhima and Arjuna went to see Jarasandha. So Jarasandha was Vedic. Doesn't mean he wasn't a demon, but he followed the Vedic philosophy, because in order to become powerful, you have to do something extraordinary. And part of that is you have to follow the laws of material nature. So following the laws of material nature means to follow the Vedas. So you can have Vedas minus Krishna, which is a kind of varnashram, is called Asurak Varnashram. So he followed it strictly, and he gave charity to the brahmanas at a certain time of the day, religiously. The idea was that Bhima, Krishna, and Arjuna would go dressed as brahmanas when Jarasandha was at the time of the day when he'd ask, when he'd give charity to the brahmins. So they went dressed as brahmins, and Krishna started to praise Jarasandha, because Jarasandha looked at them and said, well, these are pretty strange brahmanas. Usually brahmanas are around maybe, you know, 3 meters tall. These guys are 5 meters tall. And Bhima's like 6 meters, and pretty strange. And they got these marks on their shoulders that only carrying a bow gives you. So pretty strange, brahmanas. They definitely, their voices sound like kshatriyas. They don't, you know, it's out of place. But he said anyhow, they've diminished themselves by coming here and begging. In other words, if they're kshatriyas, never beg. They want to fight. But if they've actually degraded themselves by imitating a brahmin, then, you know, maybe I'll give them whatever they want. So Krishna was telling Jarasandha, he gave some examples. One of them was Ranti Dev. Ranti Dev was a king who was fasting, and it was Dwadasi, in any case, who was just about to take his meal after a long fast. It's not exactly clear how long the fast was, but it was an extraordinarily long fast. He was just about to take his meal. It was long because he was about to die unless he ate something. And some brahmins, or some, I forget who, appeared, and he gave them half his meal. And then later on, some shudras appeared, he gave him whatever was left of his meal. And then some dogs came, a man with some dogs, whose only thing left was water. And he was shaking because unless he drank the water soon, he would die. So he was just about to drink the water, and some man with dogs came and asked for the water because his dogs were thirsty. So because he was asked, King Ranti Dev gave the water to the dogs, and then they all appeared, all these people appeared as the demigods and granted him benediction. Then there is Maharishibi, who was a great king, and one day this pigeon took shelter of him and asked for protection. And following the pigeon was a hawk, and the hawk demanded the pigeon because it was his natural food. So the king, out of compassion for the pigeon, offered his own flesh to the hawk in return. And the hawk accepted. Obviously, the people were more intelligent, including the hawks and the pigeons and Dwarpa Yuga, and whatever yuga it was. So he got a scale and he put the pigeon on one side, the king, and he started to cut his flesh and to weigh equally with the pigeon. I mean, it's pretty, just imagine trying to cut your flesh to save a pigeon. I mean, it's pretty compassionate. In any case, he cut his flesh But every time you cut his flesh and put it on the scale, somehow or another the pigeon weighed more. So he couldn't cut enough flesh from his body in order to equal the weight of the pigeon. So the king hopped on the scale himself and offered himself to the hawk as food. So then the hawk revealed itself and the pigeon revealed themselves as Agni and Indra and gave the king benedictions. So Krishna was telling Jarasandha about all these people who sacrificed even their own bodies in charity and how they got immortal fame. Jarasandha was quite impressed and he thought for a while and he said, yes, whatever benediction you want, I'll give you. Even if you want my head, I'll give it to you if I can get immortal fame by doing so. In other words, for the sake of our false ego, we'll sacrifice even our body to get some profit, adoration, distinction. Go down in history. What one would not do in order to get one line in Srimad Bhagavatam. On the other hand, we have someone like Lokanath Das Goswami and Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami, who's writing Chaitanya Charitamrita. He requested that his name not be included in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, rather than, you know, getting a copy and counting how many times he mentioned my name. Is there a photo also of me in there? How many likes did I get for that? So generally speaking, in the material world, we're not just serving our bodies, although we want to get some pleasure from the body. We want to get some pleasure from our ideas, from our conceptions, from our feelings. But ultimately we want our false ego satisfied, that I'm recognized as something special in this world, and that I did my best to serve my false ego, to get my name, fame, qualities, and pastimes spread all over the universe to the best I could have in this incarnation. That everyone thinks that they're an avatar. Unfortunately, we're all Muda avatars. We're all fool avatars. And we're thinking that if people glorify us, that will be their perfection in life. If they glorify my false ego, ultimately. So here we find Hiranyakashipu similarly. He already's gone through a process of great austerity. Practically, he destroyed his own body. He was living in his bones. Still, he was interested in serving his false ego. He wanted 100 benedictions so that ultimately his false ego would be satisfied. But as we'll find out, one's false ego is never satisfied until we become Krishna, which is not possible. Therefore, it's not possible to satisfy the false ego. No matter what happens, it'll never be enough. Because it says you can satisfy everyone's needs, but you can't satisfy their greed. As soon as you try to satisfy one's needs, then there'll be greed. If we're working to satisfy our needs, there must be greed, because that's how the material nature works. And if there's greed, like Hiranyakashipu, who could be more greedy than Hiranyakashipu? He wanted the whole universe. And probably if he would have read Srimad Bhagavatam and found out there are more than one universe, he probably would have wanted a benediction. Grant me the benediction that I could travel to some other universe and take that over too. So anger will be there, frustration, because even you get everything you want to the material energy, still it's the same energy. It's the same thing, punat punas charvata charvananam. It's the same thing over and over again. It's simply the same earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. And it doesn't matter how much you get from it, you can't be satisfied. It's like they used to have this candy. They probably still have it. I don't know if they have it here. It was called cotton candy. You've had cotton candy? It's made of purely sugar, and they spin the sugar. So it gets, you know, they put an eighth of a cup of sugar in the machine and it puffs up to this big, big thing. You think it's a bargain. Paying 10 euros for this huge round thing was made out of an eighth of a cup of sugar, puffed up sugar. You eat it, you're eating 99% air, and there's a little bit of sugar in the air. You think you're enjoying it. And at the end, all you did is eat a quarter of a cup of sugar, about probably the same, or an eighth, same amount in a Coca-Cola. And you're more dissatisfied than you were before. You just swallowed so much air with some sugar, and you thought you were enjoying it. But it wasn't ordinary sugar, it was green sugar, or pink sugar. So you thought, this is really good. But you don't really get anything from it. You don't get nutrition, you don't get satisfaction, you don't get strength, you don't get anything. You just get air with some sugar in it. So similar to the material world, wherever you go, whatever you do, it's the same things, just in combinations and permutations appearing as reality. And so how much one chooses in the material world, one winds up with the same thing. Just a lot of air with a little bit of sugar mixed into it. So Hiranyakashipu, he went through so much austerity to get everything he wanted, including mystic power, but he was never satisfied. And if you become lusty and greedy and angry, then the result is you'll become also deluded. So you may wonder, why is it that after chewing on the material energy for so long and not getting any satisfaction, as there's one music group, they've been singing for the last at least 60 years the same song, can't get satisfaction, and they still haven't gotten any satisfaction. Nor are the people who've been listening to them for 60 years been satisfied. They simply hear the same old song over and over again without being satisfied. So one may wonder, how is it that after so much endeavor and not getting satisfied, finding simply it's the same old little bit of colored sugar with a lot of air, people keep on going at it because of delusion. No matter how much you become lusty and greedy and frustrated, still delusion will take over. And one will think, well, it's only a little bit in front of us. I just a little more endeavor and I can actually get it. It's there, but I just didn't pick up on the last clue. I'm almost at the jackpot. I just need the one more clue, and I got it. So that's called delusion, or madness, depending on how you want to look at it. To do the same thing over and over again and get the same result and still do it again is called madness. Do it again expecting a different result. If you have a coin that has both sides have heads on it, you keep on flipping it hoping to get a tail, then you're crazy. You should look at both sides and see they're both heads. You'll never get a tail. Doesn't matter how many times you flip it. But due to delusion, people don't care. They keep on going at it again and again and again because Maya makes a vision that you're just 1 inch ahead and you'll get it. The ass carrying a heavy burden on his back, carrying all the weight of the laundry on his back, and the washing man putting a carrot right in front of the ass, and the ass takes a step forward, and the carrot takes a step forward, and the ass is looking at it and said, I thought it was only one step, maybe it was two. He takes another step, and the carrot goes one step in front of it. Maybe it's three. And that way he goes forward carrying this very heavy burden on his back, thinking there's only one more step. I just miscalculated. So that's called illusion, or ignorance, or foolishness, or madness, whatever you want to call it. And the result is, why is it the ass do it? Because he forgets, I've been doing this all day, one more step. And I never get there. But he forgets. He has no memory. Therefore he thinks he doesn't remember taking the other 5,000 steps. He's going to take one more, he thinks. And because he lost his memory, therefore he has no basis of intelligence. He can't compare it to anything else that he's doing. He can't, has no perspective on things. And therefore, he simply does the same thing over and over again without any result. So Aranyakashipu is another crazy, powerful, crazy person by Krishna's arrangement. And due to his false ego, he actually is going to, no matter what's going to happen, he's determined to become the lord of the material energy in spite of whatever obstacles may be, in spite of common sense that the person who's given him the benediction has already said that he can live forever. But anyhow, better to serve my false ego up until the end than surrender to God and admit that I'm actually tiny and insignificant. So Hiranyakashipu is the acharya, the mahatma, for practically everyone else in the universe. And although people will say, oh, he was not a very nice person, but then again, anyone who's not a devotee is also in the same category. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes. You got that right. No, I mean, use the microphone. Does it work?
Okay, my question is...
Does the microphone work?
No.
It doesn't work.
No.
Okay, I'll repeat the question. The son of Hiranyakashipu was a great devotee. How did Hiranyakashipu not get some benedictions to become a devotee himself? Well, to make a long story short, the reason why Prahlad was born to Hiranyakashipu was that Hiranyakashipu and his brother one day decided to do some austerity in order to become the lords of the universe. So they went out together. But the demigods, realizing his objective, became fearful. And they went to Lord Brahma, and at that same time, Narada Muni with Parvati Muni was there. And they said, don't worry, we'll take care of it. So Hiranyakashipu and his brother went out into the, in order to perform the austerities in a secluded place in the mountains. And they were standing there, just like he did later on the tips of his toes, and with Hiranyaksha, ready to go through 100-something years of austerity. And at that time, Narada Muni and Parvati Muni came as little sparrows, and at the top of their lungs were chanting, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So Hiranyakashipu took a rock and threw it at the birds, and they flew away. Then they went back to the austerity, and again, these birds came back and at the top of their lungs were chanting, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So Hiranyakashipu couldn't meditate. This all went on the whole day. And so he was completely disturbed. Him and his brother said, we'll come back tomorrow and begin our austerity again. So he went back and all he could hear in his mind was Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. He couldn't get it out of his mind. And he hated Vishnu, so he didn't want to think of Vishnu. So then he decided to enjoy with his wife that night. Maybe he could forget about these birds and chanting Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. But even when he was enjoying with his wife, he was thinking of Vasudev, of Krishna. And so Prahlad was born, because he was thinking of Krishna at the time of conception. So that's how Prahlad came. Later on, of course, Hiranyakashipu forgot this Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. He saw those birds again, he would have killed them. He wouldn't have thrown a rock at them. So that's why.
Thank you.
Anything else?
Hare Krishna. What would it take for a modern human being to avoid hell? Is it enough for them to take prasadam? Is it enough for them to chant Hare Krishna?
Well, I'm not Yamaraj, so you have to ask that. I'm not a mission, so I don't. But generally, when Prabhupada is asked when he's asked a number of times about if you take prasadam, is it enough to get a human form of life? Prabhupada's answer was no. It's not enough. You have to also know that it's prasadam, that it's Krishna's mercy. Otherwise, if you take prasadam and you don't know that, then the result will be that you'll get some form of life and you'll get the opportunity to eat prasadam again. So that's not enough. Even if you chant Hare Krishna, the Mayavadis chant Hare Krishna, but aparad, and therefore they're destined, by chanting Hare Krishna, they're paving the way to go to hell. So it's not enough just to chant Hare Krishna either. You have to chant Hare Krishna with the right understanding. Or at least it should be something like Nama Vas rather than Nama Parad.
And if they offer some assistance to devotees and the preaching mission?
You get Gati Sukriti, and if that builds up, you know, then you'll get some better days. But it's not like in astrology. People think that I have an exalted planet here in Rasi and I have a debilitated planet here. They cancel each other. They don't cancel each other. You get the results of whatever we do, whatever we think, whatever we say, we get the results of it. And therefore we get a combination. And therefore Prabhupada writes in the Bhagavad Gita that if one performs devotional service, that it's never lost. That Tyatva Sadharman Charanam Bhuja Mahare. It's never lost. That even if one is born, one has a low born in his next lifetime, still auspicious Krishna consciousness will continue. So one will get the results of what one is doing. Otherwise, then it's inexplicable how Bharat Maharaj was on the threshold of bhava, could have become a deer. So to get any guarantee, you know, I'm guaranteed I chant Hare Krishna. That story I told before about the man who gave $5. Yeah, so he's wrong. It doesn't make up for it. Yeah, you get the reactions. But if you chant Hare Krishna, then you'll get it auspicious, and that will not be lost. Sometimes, some way, sometime you get the results of it. Anything else? Yes.
Maharaj, your whole lecture was mostly presentation of how we are unable to give up the subtlest identification of ours with our false ego. But this element, being the subtlest, means it cannot be reached neither by intelligence nor by any other grosser facility. It's not strange that we cannot give it up, because whatever we do is controlled by that element. So what are the methods? Because Ananta Prabhu, I know many times, says that the only bypass is instruction of spiritual master that can bypass the control of false ego. So what can we do beside that, or how to deal with this?
Our false ego?
Well, we
just acquire a real ego. Identify ourselves as dasa, dasa, anadasa, as a servant of the servant of Krishna. And anything we do in that consciousness, or as much consciousness as we have, that Krishna is the controller, Krishna is the enjoyer, Krishna is the friend, and whatever we do to serve Krishna and his devotees, in that consciousness, then as Krishna Das or Dasi, then we're surpassing the false ego. Therefore, we take initiation with the idea that I'm simply accepting for now on that my actual identity is not this body or this mind. I'm giving up my false ego and accepting myself as a servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna. And even when we accept a spiritual master, his duty is to teach us how to serve all the other devotees appropriately. And all the devotees are supposed to teach us how to serve the innocent people properly. And they're also supposed to teach us, I mean, not only how to love Krishna, how to cooperate with each other, and also serve the more elevated devotees, but also help the innocent and avoid the atheists. So if we do things in that way, then gradually our false ego will go away. We do all four of those things. Love Krishna, serve the devotees, help the innocent, and avoid the atheists. Then our false ego will gradually go away. Okay, thank you very much. Grandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.